talk to people who've gone through that. And I'm proud of, you know, the investigative piece that we also published that was originally supposed to appear in the Toronto Star, but was a huge media dust up where, you know, the Pulitzer Prize winning photographer left the Star because he wanted to tell this story about the discovery of the shipwreck.
Yeah, that was Paul Watson's The Wreck of HMS Erebus. How a landmark discovery triggered a fight for Canada's history.
You know, we worked on that story really hard. I got support from our long-form editors in the U.S. also worked on it with me and ended up winning a silver in the investigative category at National Magazine Awards during the election. And I'll tell you, I mean, I'm also proud of Lauren. Did a lot of great reporting and visibility stuff around LGBTQ stories. Also, I thought Emma's piece of MPs who look like Pokemon was extremely well executed. Not even joking.
Like, it was perfect.
It really looked like them. And I was also proud of it because, like, Emma, look at what she was doing. She was doing all these different types of things. And if people thought that was a ridiculous story, then they couldn't ignore the next story she wrote about something serious and political. And so, like, I was happy when we were able to hit those different notes and to bring something different. And so, yeah, there's a lot. Certainly a lot I'm proud of that time. And some of it is the fun and ridiculous stuff. And some of it is the serious news. And I'm just happy we did both because that was the mission.
And my recollection of the Ottawa coverage is that it really made politics accessible in a different way, or political writing accessible in a different way that it's so rare. And then the fact that, just being able to use the BuzzFeed format to tell an actual news story. But even you mentioned that, like, politicians look like Pokemon. Like, somehow that, beyond just being fun, I don't know, I really find that that's the sort of thing that does draw people, maybe if not into politics, and certainly toward politics.
You know, what if you had no idea who your MP was, and by reading that article you suddenly realized who your local MP was? Maybe that's a good thing from it, right? Yeah.
But also, I think just in general, you know, this idea of do yourself a favor and just, like, read literally any Globe and Mail politics story and try to think about the things that it assumes a reader knows, right? Just try to think about the assumptions that it makes in the opening graph and by the time you get to the nut of that, how many things were assumed in terms of how much base knowledge you have. What I'm really proud of in terms of our political coverage was that we never assumed anything. And in doing so, it alienated, I think, a bunch of people who are like, well, I'm already in the politics world. Right. I don't need this explained to me. But it also conversely brought a bunch of people who are like, I'm kind of outside of this process and I don't really speak the language that well. But, you know, when you do this Pokemon story, it gives me an opening, a window so that I can actually engage with political coverage of my elections that matter to me because I can actually, like, talk about it. I can follow you doing these stories. I think something that was really remarkable, and that kind of continued across all of the political coverage that BuzzFeed did, whether in the UK or in the US for any election, is that it just never assumed this, like, deeply sophisticated sort of knowledge of politics, because politics tends to be this kind of cumulative field in terms of you covering it. So you're building a lot of stories. You're kind of, like, assuming a pretty base level of working knowledge. We never saw it as shameful to not assume that. I sort of really admire that about our approach.
So at the end of the first year, there was a party at the Burroughs building. And I think it was maybe the same day you both had presentations at Social Media Week Toronto. And Craig, yours was called A Year of Wins and Fails at BuzzFeed Canada. And this was the summary from your slide. Could you just read this out?
Okay. To recap, social is not about pushing out links and or your message. Relatability is king. Mm. Be Canadian, but appreciate the nuances. Realize that the world has interest in Canada. And finally, understand your boundaries and find ways to experiment within them.
How do you feel
about
it?
Pretty good advice, man.
It's, like, vague enough that I could, like, riff on it right now without not knowing what I was saying at the time.
Relatability is king.
That's
still true.
That is a core foundational BuzzFeed thing. We did experience stories that got attention far outside Canada. And we could see the traffic coming from Canada versus coming from outside Canada or what have you. And so, like, that was definitely a thing where we felt we were showing that there was something to make the argument for being in Canada. Little did we know that, you know, would not last.
Well, that's what I was wondering. I mean, because, you were doing things that were making, undoubtedly, and you continue to make waves across the world with your coverage, but less and less it became about Canada. One of your points there was realize the world's interest in Canada, and then it was, like, just a few weeks later that there was a decision at BuzzFeed to cease Canadian political coverage, and the two reporters in Ottawa, Emma and Paul, they were reassigned, or they were given opportunities.
They were given the choice.
They went to D.C., Washington, D.C. that fall. So what Yeah, could you talk about that, like that turning point, where that decision came from, or what you know about?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things to talk about sort of why the decision came down to basically stop doing Canadian news was really in around my first hiring, came in with some advantages where they let us hire news right away. We already had revenue, and we thought these were things that would be bulwarks. We thought these would like be defensible to like keep a Canadian business in operation. But it ended up in some ways working against us because, one, already a top 10 site in Canada in our category. So even though we hired in the end, we had like 10 people, the traffic didn't really change that much. So it's not like you could be
the, like went from 10 to 1, you know, because you're already pulling a fair bit of traffic.
Already, you know, it's like to have a huge incremental difference to be bigger than like all of Bell Media's sites, you'd need to have a lot more than 10 people was the thing that I started to realize later in the year, and that we were not going to be able to say, yes, we doubled traffic after the first year. And as much as I never received a single traffic goal or metric, of course, traffic mattered at BuzzFeed, right? And so the advantage of coming in and already having a big audience worked against us because we didn't get to say after a year and you hiring 10 people here, we doubled, we tripled your traffic. The other one was revenue, I think, which is we already had revenue and revenue absolutely grew in that first year. But I don't think the money people felt that it grew to the extent of like, oh, we needed to have lots of these people here in order for this money to grow. I think they felt we could have a much more marginal investment and we'd still rake in lots of
Would have kept growing whether we had 7 BuzzFeed Canada people or 2.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
And news is never a good argument for revenue, right?
No.
So news was like, that was a decision by Ben to want to put news in, and I wouldn't have been the editor if he hadn't. So I'm grateful for it. And so some of our advantages, I think, worked against us. And then I also often, I mean, look, when you have an American company and they look at us up here and they say, well, they speak the same language, they have a lot of the same cultural references. Do we really need to be doing Canadian news? I think there was just like an American boss thing. Now, our saving grace, because before any of the changes became known publicly, I was in New York and I sat down with Scott Lamb, who was the head of BuzzFeed International, and Ben, the editor-in-chief. And they basically told me, like, we love the people you've hired, but we just don't think we can continue to invest in Canadian stuff like this. They're like, there just isn't the support for us to be having this many people doing only Canadian stuff. So we have to change this in order for all of you to like keep your jobs and for us to keep you here.
One of the comments in the culminating oral history from Joel Anderson, long former sports national reporter, was everyone seemed to understand that the ride was going to be fun but short. I guess at the end of 2016, you moved from being the editor of BuzzFeed Canada to becoming the first media editor of BuzzFeed in the wake of a couple hugely successful stories, bookend, like one with the week before Trump's election, one the week after, about fake news and the sense of like deliberately manufactured false information for clicks. And what were the next couple of years like as the shift away from Canada happened?
No one really knew how long they had to sort of figure out this new mix and would BuzzFeed actually keep them around. And so it was very nerve-wracking, and it went from a very high, great first year or so together for some of us, and you know, or 6 or 7 months, to, yeah, what is going to happen? And to be honest with you, I disagree with Joel's sentiment because I didn't think it was going to be that short. You know, maybe I drank too much of the Kool-Aid. I thought I could foresee us being there for a while, even after BuzzFeed Canada had sort of the news ripped out of it for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, my experience of that time is not particularly tenuous. Like, kind of felt like the balance of 20 to 30% of your time is spent on Canada stuff. 70 to 80% of your time is spent doing something with like one of your U.S. teams really felt sustainable. Like, it sort of felt like this could go on for like a little while. My duties on the curation team were like a little in flux for a bit. At first, I was, you know, they were like, hey, we're going to get you to make videos. And I was like, I'm not very good at this, but okay, go off. But then that got changed a couple times over, became the Twitter person, it became the Facebook person, then it became the newsletter person. And the newsletter person, I did that for like 3.5 years.
That was your shit.
That was my entire shit.
You were the guy.
That always felt sustainable for me to be able to like, we will do both. We're not going to do Canada the same way we're doing it for that magical sort of year period. But there were still moments where Lauren Strapagale, Ishmael had left at this point. But like whether it was Lauren or Sarah Aspler or Kat Angus, they would just jump on a Canada thing and be like, this is quick to do. We're not making every day like this, you know, but we were still kind of doing that.
You got to do a little taste.
It was
a
like
little,
a Canada snack.
A little treat.
And so that kind of felt pretty sustainable, but also in general, in terms of the idea of BuzzFeed feeling sustainable. For the most part, it did until it didn't, you know? It kind of went away really quickly.
And look, change, yeah. One of the things about the experience of BuzzFeed is things change all the time. And that was one of the frustrations you could have is like, all right, everybody, we're doing Facebook Live. And then 3 months later, I'd be like, oh, okay, do this. Yeah. And so there was that going on, which I've worked at Starz before, so it wasn't that uncommon to me, but that's not that common in newsrooms, I suppose. So that was one of the things that at times, you know, you felt like you were careening in one direction or the next. And you did start to see at a certain point where things like they had a great podcast team and then they killed that team and they had great podcasts and they killed those. And you're like, why are you doing that? That's a really dumb decision. And so, you know, it seemed like everything was going fine, but then you started to notice more and more. So you get to like 2017, 2018, 2019. Eventually, we start to have our first layoffs.
In January 2019.
Yeah, and it starts to feel like, oh, yeah, this is like what newsrooms are like. You know? But you still thought, okay, so we're smaller. We're maybe less ambitious, but we can still do a lot. And, you know, for me, it was the experience of when I first came in. We were the talent magnet. We were hiring people. We were getting amazing people. We were poaching. And then as things had definitely shifted by the time we get to, I think, 2018, but definitely into 2019, where BuzzFeed is getting poached. Yeah. BuzzFeed News are, you know, talent is getting stripped away. And so it sort of feels, it feels like we've hit the high point, and now it's like, okay, so where do we end up? What is our new baseline? And unfortunately, it just kept declining and going down until recently they just killed the whole thing.
But can I just say, like, very early on, I want to say maybe one of the all hands in 2015 or 2016, someone asked Jonah Peretti in one of these all hands. He was like, Jonah, where do we spend our philanthropy money? And he made this joke. He was like, our largest philanthropic donation is news. And it stuck with me. It was like, even then, I was like, this guy doesn't necessarily think of news as a thing that is a crucial or even like a sustainable part of this business, in the sense that like everything else is making money. The newsroom is not making money. And you get to this period of time in the last couple of years where it's like, okay, I don't need news to make money. I just need it to sort of break even.
Yeah.
And it couldn't quite get there. Like that's why we're here now.
That was the original sin with news at BuzzFeed, is that the theory from Jonah and from the most senior ad salespeople was hiring people to sell ads for news is a waste, because we could add two people selling ads for news, or we could add two more people selling ads for Tasty. We're going to get more money selling ads on Tasty than news.
Yeah.
So literally we had no ads, number one, on the BuzzFeed site at all when we got there, which was turning away free money. Mm-hmm. They finally turned on banner ads. And then eventually they started saying, okay, let's do some business development on news. And that was years and years into there being a news division. And in the end, they could never catch up to the point of...
It was like 2017 when they finally started doing that. You know, like it was much later.
So that was just... It was, and Jonah has admitted that now, when BuzzFeed News shut down, that I took too long to try and build a business out of news. And that's true. That was the thing that I think ultimately killed it, because, you know, they also suffered from the high expectations. They believed that the business they were building outside of news was going to be so big and was going to have big money coming directly from platforms that it didn't matter if news itself was making money. And that was totally wrong.
But I should also say, like, it is not a reasonable proposal to go to an advertiser and say, would you like to spend this money and have it be spent on news, or would you like to have it be spent on some of the buzz content that gets, you know, 3-4 times the number of eyeballs, and it's just lighter content, you know what I mean?
Well, but it can work if your demographics of news support the brand's mission, right? But you're 100% right that most brands
will be like,
if they have
in,
a choice,
put in the fun thing
to be new by beside news or the light thing, they take the light thing. There's no question.
And they took it every single time. They took it every single time. Like when we got like a week sponsored by somebody like in news, I was like, who are these people?
Yeah, he probably got thrown in. It's like, right? I'll tell you what. I'm going to have
$5 more.
Yeah, I'll
you can have your news too.
Yeah. And here, you can have a homepage takeover for a week.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, I don't want that. No, you're taking it. Yeah. Please take our
Someone
homepage.
Someone take news.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. And so, I mean, when you left, like, I mean, you already left for ProPublica in the spring of 2021. Was that a difficult decision?
It wasn't hard in the sense that I really wanted to stay anymore, but I don't mean it that negative. It's just like I had been there since, 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
I had had a bunch of different roles. I had been a manager, and I had only at that point spent roughly a year just as a reporter without having people reporting to me, because, I hired Jane Litvinenko at the end of 2016, and we worked together closely as a team. Mm-hmm. We hired people like Lisa Hicks and others and a video team in the whole sort of debunking team that we had. And then I had the last close to a year where I was simply just a reporter. Nobody reported to me. And I was able to sit and think for the first time what I wanted to do, because I wasn't responsible for people. I could never felt I could leave when I had people reporting to me, especially in those precarious times where sort of Canada was shifting. If I had left, you know, would they have laid off people because I was gone? And so I just had an opportunity to think about it and just felt like there weren't more roles for me or more for me to do at BuzzFeed. So I just went looking to find other places, and ProPublica was really the only place I wanted to go, and it worked out. And in retrospect, obviously, the team I was on at that time, the sort of tech/business team at BuzzFeed News, it basically completely imploded in the coming months. You know, Jane left soon after. Mm-hmm. Ryan Mack, my reporting partner on a lot of Facebook stuff, left soon after. And really, you know, the whole team almost sort of left and had a turnover. And so clearly it was time for a change for a lot of people. Then.
Yeah, and a lot of people, I mean, I'm certainly in Toronto, I don't know how many people were going to the office then, but certainly a lot of people were leaving. Like,
correct.
Lauren left that fall, Kat Angus left February of 2022. Mm-hmm. You stuck around till the end of last year, Elliman.
My last day at BuzzFeed officially was January 15th, 2023. So actually, it was this calendar year.
Oh,
like,
wow.
It was 3 months before the whole thing happened.
Did it feel like, you know, I think we've all been into newsrooms that have fewer people than they used to have, and you can sort of sense that emptiness? Was it anything like that?
No, I mean, listen, I wanted to leave in 2020. My plan was to leave in 2020 because I had to go, I was going to go pursue a book leave. And before I could go on my book leave, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to come back. The newsletter hours are honestly a little bit exhausting to me because I tended to write them early in the morning. And I just wanted to be like, okay, what else can I explore? And Sari Yasin, who just the greatest human being, was like, you're leaving. You're not leaving. You know, we'll find something else that you want to do. What else do you want to do? And I was like, well, you know, I've always kind of been a little bit interested in writing long form. And she kind of shepherded my transition from the curation team to the culture team. And so there I could do some more of the long form writing, some more of the reporting that I wanted to do, which was just the delight of my life. And so stuck around from 2020 until 2023, until this opportunity with the CBC came up. It just kind of made sense to leave now. When I was leaving, I didn't think that BuzzFeed News would die this quickly. I thought it was probably nearing its end, right? Like, because last year when Carolina, who was my former boss, became the editor-in-chief, the vibe and the mood was, okay, we have a year to become profitable as a newsroom. And if it doesn't happen within that year, then it's going to be like we're in real trouble. But it didn't last a year.
No.
It didn't last a year from that year warning. It sort of lasted about 8 months, right? Eight or 9 months.
Because the stock price is in the toilet. They went public. They shouldn't have gone public and followed through with that. Stock price goes in the toilet. And then Jonah, who has, to his own detriment, kept news going longer than any of his investors or board members, I think, really wanted. At that point, he has no choice because he's the CEO of a public company that is now in danger of being delisted from the stock exchange. And it's a cost center. And even if BuzzFeed News was breaking even, it's still a way to reduce costs overall. And so I think at that point, he had no choice. He loved having news. He loved that it stirred up shit.
Sure.
But he also, you know, it was mismanaged, and he's admitted it was mismanaged. It was done in a way that was not sustainable. It was done in a way that hastened its decline by not actually treating it seriously like a business and not just some, oh, great little philanthropic thing that we do, you know?
Yeah. So it's a business that won a Pulitzer, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, take it with the seriousness that it deserves, you know?
One last comment from the oral history I want to quote was from Tom Warren, investigative reporter. He said, the experience of working here, while sometimes frustrating and often stressful, was a dream come true.
Yeah.
The rest of the news business looks insipid and gray in comparison. I'm not asking you to diss your current employers or anything, but like, what is it? What does it all look like looking back at what it, this bright red and yellow thing that this was? What do you...
I've never had that much freedom in a job to find out if a thing works or not. And sometimes I'm like, Craig, I have an insane idea. And you're like, all right, why not? Just go try it. That ethos comes from not having anything to protect, right? Like, when we call a legacy organization a legacy organization, what we're talking about is the risk to their name is too high for them to be like, you know what? Sure, take that risk. It doesn't matter. That's what a legacy is. Like, there's a real sense of like protectiveness around a name. There's a real protectiveness around a history. So you're like, we're not going to try shit. Mm-hmm. But there was, even to the very end, you know, I'm really talking about a eulogy here. I don't want to give a eulogy, but even to the very end, there was still the sense of like, I don't know if that'll work, but try it. Like, because it's worth doing. I don't know if there's anything in that story, but let's go find out. And I think it's really easy to romanticize that freedom. I think it might also be worth noting, maybe that freedom doesn't continue to keep the lights on, you know, long term. But while you have it, it's a dream come true.
I work with such wonderful people. But I'm also somebody who's old enough now that I've probably written for more news organizations that do not exist than ones that still do. I have been involved in a few media startups. And so to me, the thing that I've always experienced is like, sure, you go through things and you take them with you personally. But the thing that lasts, because BuzzFeed News isn't around, and while BuzzFeed Canada is, it's what happens is the people. It's the people that we had. We had that team of 10. And so now everybody has sort of scattered to different places. But everything we got to do together and everything we learned, we get to bring to the new places that we go. And so that's the thing that's actually has lots of longevity. Like, sure, there's articles we all wrote that we're proud of and what have you. But the thing that has the longevity and that actually makes the most change is where the people go after they have this experience and what they bring to the new places. And that's the exciting thing that actually changes Canadian media.
Yeah.
I guess in terms of, once again, if BuzzFeed was all this whole history of media collapsed into a decade, do you think that it has lessons for where everything else is heading?
Well, look, I mean, some of the weird things about BuzzFeed that were kind of a contradiction is when I went there, I assumed that, like everyone had said, oh, the homepage is dead. But then I got there and I looked at the traffic and it's like, no, actually the homepage is our top place. People still go to the homepage.
Yeah.
And then a few years into it, everybody at BuzzFeed realized, wow, we are doing things that not only aren't optimized for search traffic, like getting traffic from Google, but we're actually doing things that are actively harming and hurting our chance of getting this audience there. And so there was, I think, a blind commitment that was harmful in the end to thinking, yes, everything is moving to social. And so that was a mantra. And there were a lot of mistakes built into that. And so I think hopefully one of the lessons is, you know, the diversification and the closer you can be to your audience, get your business built from multiple revenue streams and be as close to your audience as you possibly can. Get rid of the intermediary, whether it's Facebook or whatever, because, you know, Jonah believed that eventually Facebook and Google and others would pay BuzzFeed tons of money for its content. It never happened.
Yeah.
And that was at the root of it, and it was wrong. And so the media business today is going back, I think, hopefully to some fundamentals of realizing, actually, you need a relationship with your audience as close as possible. Do not let it be mediated by somebody else.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you,
Thank
pal.
You. This yeah. is so great.
Thanks for having us.
I really appreciate this. And I'm sorry this is so hot in here. That is your Canada Land. We are still on Twitter at CanadaLand. Our website is CanadaLand.com. I'm Jonathan Goldsby, filling in for Jesse Brown, and much as you can email him at jesse@CanadaLand.com, you can reach me at jonathan@CanadaLand.com. And I will match his promise to at least read everything you sent. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson, with additional production on this episode by Noor Azrieh and editing by Tristan Capicchione. Our managing editor is Annette Ajofo. Our theme music is by So-Called, and syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca.
Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. Tim Bousquet, editor of the Halifax Examiner, joining us from Halifax. How you doing?
Hi, Jesse. It's good to see you.
Welcome to Shortcuts, Tim, where we talk shit about the news.
Good to be here.
Which basically there's a backlash to something called the Collision Tech Conference in Toronto, and I would like to gleefully join this backlash. It's been going on for some years now. And I first learned about them when they, some years ago, emailed me, the publicist, you get these emails, hey, there's this big world-class tech conference. We're based in Ireland, but Toronto, lucky you, we're coming out to Toronto. And look at who is there. do you want like accreditation? We'll give you free passes to this conference and look who's available for interviews. Do you want to interview any of these people? And then I looked at the list and I'm like, well, holy shit. It was like the CEO of Twitter. I'm like, really? Like the CEO of Twitter is available for interviews with Canada Land? That sounds unlikely to me. But yeah, like I'll find something to talk about with the CEO of Twitter. And there were two other names. I was like, yeah, like absolutely, you know, we'll take the free passes and please get me those interviews. And then I didn't hear anything until somebody alerted me to the fact that on the Collision website, in the part where they market this conference to vendors and people who have to buy tickets for a lot of money, they said, come to this Collision conference. You will be covered by media, including Canada Land. And they had our logo up there. I think they might have even called us a media partner. I can't remember exactly. But I was like, what the this is a racket, man. Like, they woo you in. And I guess that by agreeing to go cover it or take their press pass, I have also agreed for them to market their conference with like attention from my media organization, and they're going to go sell their products. Like, so I told everybody here, do not accept anything from these people. This is sketchy as heck. And now I read a couple of things. I read in the Globe and Mail editorial from a guy named Philippe Tellier, runs a rival conference, a Canadian conference called Startup Fest. And what he wrote was that, like, this Collision conference, they get millions of dollars from Canadian governments, and they're a bad actor. They're competing against local conferences. We're more than able to have our own conferences, and they're asking for $40 million, and they burn through cities. Collision's been in Vegas. They've been in New Orleans. They've got this other event that ditched Dublin for Lisbon. Like, they basically go around the world seeing which local government will give them more money, according to Philippe Tellier. And this is basically a cry from the heart that we should stop giving the money. We shouldn't give them the $40 million they're asking for. And then I read David Skok, who's the publisher of The Logic. He's been covering, you know, his news organization, they cover the technology and business. They've been covering the Collision Fest, but they got booted. They got booted, and they got booted because they have a bunch of events. Like, they got like a dozen events a year for their subscribers. We do this too. We have events for our subscribers, right? So they had an event. It wasn't even at the same time as Collision, but they got an email from Collision, and it said, it's come to our attention that you're organizing an event in Toronto piggybacking Collision. Running other events that piggyback ours is not something we support. We won't be having anyone from The Logic speak at this or any future Web Summit or Collision events. And then they said that they have rejected The Logic's newsroom request for accreditation. So Logic's reporters were booted out from even covering the conference.
So this group is going around and getting government money to put on big, what are they, like We Day for the tech industry?
It's funny you should mention, because guess who goes to these events and poses with the CEOs as a big champion?
No.
Justin Trudeau. If you are like any of these Canadian businesses, whether you are The Logic doing your thing or whether you are this other tech conference, and BetaKit, I think, did a lot of the good reporting uncovering this. But it's a good photo op for, you know, John Tory was supportive of this when he was mayor, and Trudeau goes and co-signs this and does photo ops because they get to pose with the big leaders in tech. And back before there was a big tech backlash, it was a really good look to look like you're down with the biggest tech people in the world. Meanwhile, you're doing so at the expense of our local, like, tech journalism and tech scene. Like, we can do this shit ourselves. Like, I remember the Mesh conference. We've had conferences, tech conferences in Canada for many years. We don't need this kind of predatory company to come in here. So I don't know. They caved and they gave The Logic back their press credentials. But I just was reading this after kind of privately feeling like, I wonder if these guys are sketchy. They seem sketchy as hell to me. And then reading these pieces, I thought, like, I'm going to talk about this finally.
Duly noted.
That is Shortcuts. I can be emailed at jesse@canadaland.com. We're on Twitter at Canada Land. Email me. I read everything that you send. Tim, where can people find you?
I'm at tim@halifaxexaminer.ca and also on Twitter at tim_bousquet, which is B-O-U-S-Q-U-E-T.
This episode is produced by Aviva Lessard with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our managing editor is Annette Ajofo. Theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Once again, we have an open call for podcast pitches. That's at canadaland.com/pitch-us-your-podcast. Hyphens in between each of those words. Thank you for supporting Canada Land.